AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. March corn touched $8 this morning. Wow. Crude oil back above $110 a barrel, and, well, sure, winter wheat futures are limit up again this morning. An administration building at a nuclear power plant in Ukraine was attacked, which seems to have elevated anxiety about just what Russian President Putin is capable of in this war.
Live, we've got the band back together via Farm Journal broadcast. This is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday Free for All with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and yours truly, Davis Michelson. We'll also welcome Georgia Congressman Austin Scott. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I am handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, welcome back to the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
Hey, thank you, Davis. You and Tyne were awesome the past couple of days. I had a job up
I had a job up in
Grand Forks to take care of and was happy to get up there and do that. But some great conversations on AgriTalk the past couple of days. Good job, buddy.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate you saying so, man. It's all about the guests and just getting.
Oh,
that's
sure.
The formula. You know, I figured it out. You get
Dang.
Smart guys come on and you
Dang.
Make them talk.
You
know,
solved my mystery. Yeah. Get really smart people on, and it makes radio pretty easy.
It's a
which
good
we've
strategy.
Got going today. Yeah.
Yes, we do.
We've got that going today. Representative Scott from Georgia, member of the House Ag Committee, member of the House Armed Services Committee. Seems like a perfect combination to get on and get an update about what he knows and what the briefings are sounding like regarding Russia's invasion of Ukraine and what some of the analysis is indicating on what the timetable of this might be. The attack on that administrative building at the power plant, it's really scary. It gave Zelensky an opportunity to tell a really, really scary story about what this conflict could mean, and if Putin does continue to take chances like were taken in the attack of that administration building. Because what if you miss? What if you miss and you crack open one of those storage units?
Forget about it.
Which is what Zelensky said. Forget about it. Forget about Europe. Because of the devastation that would bring to the region. It's incredibly scary, and obviously the markets are reflecting some of the terror that they are experiencing in Ukraine. So we've got a lot of news to get to, Davis. Let's get rolling on this.
Yes. Well, let's start here, where job growth soared in February as employers added 678,000 jobs and the unemployment rate fell to 3.8% from 4%. It was the best month for job growth since July. The nation has 2.1 million jobs to go before hitting the February 2020 level and recouping all positions lost in the pandemic. But, Chip, this feels like a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it is. It is. I don't think there's any question about it. I'll admit I've been keeping up or trying to keep up with everything that's all the news coming out of Ukraine. Haven't spent a whole lot of time with the jobs report yet, but we will. We will have some analysis of that report this afternoon.
Well, and as we were talking about, Russian troops seized Europe's largest nuclear power plant after fighting sparked a fire that raised worldwide alarms about radiation leaks. Ukraine's foreign ministry said any damage to a storage facility for spent nuclear fuel could release nuclear radiation and called on global leaders to take decisive action. International monitors said there was no sign that radiation had leaked. Chip, that plant, it's the largest of its kind in Europe. It provides about 20% of Ukraine's electricity.
Yeah. Now, that's another measuring stick of just how far Putin may push the attack.
And here's the thing, our next story, NATO will not establish a no-fly zone over Ukrainian airspace amid a full-scale invasion from Russian armed forces. Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said during a press briefing that, quote, allies agree that we should not have NATO planes operating over Ukrainian airspace or NATO troops on Ukrainian territory. And Chip, I feel like if Putin's going to keep pushing buttons like he is here at this nuclear facility, there's going to have to be some sort of pushback in a dramatic fashion here from NATO, from somebody.
Well, he's going to make a mistake, and he's going to involve NATO, a NATO country, in this conflict at some point. And when he does, you know, then it's going to be time to punch him. Yeah, then it's going to be time to punch him in the nose, and we'll see what happens.
Well, State Energy and Natural Resources Committee members introduced the Ban Russian Energy Imports Act Thursday, which would block imports of Russian crude oil, petroleum, its products, liquefied natural gas, and coal. The bill has 16 co-sponsors. Of note, Chip, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said she was, quote, all for banning Russian oil. About 3,000 workers at Canadian Pacific Railway Limited voted in favor of going on strike March 16 if a collective bargaining agreement isn't reached. According to their union, Nutrien, the world's biggest crop nutrient producer, is asking the Canadian government to intervene. And let's see, do we have time for one? Yes, the Biden administration is looking at whether waiving biofuels blending requirements under the RFS could help fend off food inflation, according to Reuters. An official told Reuters there is no serious consideration of this right now. But given surging food inflation, it was just a matter of time until the food versus fuel debate rekindled. Chip.
Yeah. Yeah. It's happening again. I mean, there's no question about it. No matter how many times the issue is brought up and torn down, it's going to continue to come up. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good, good. The Association of Swine Veterinarians recently met. Animal disease prevention, it's got to be at the top of the priority list yet, isn't it?
Yes, they devoted the whole kind of the conclusion of the conference and a whole morning to the topic of foreign animal disease. And, of course, you know, it was sprinkled throughout presentations, you know, throughout the entire event. But definitely a big focus. And they brought in some of the state veterinarians to come in and talk about it from their perspective, because, you know, really we're doing all this work as a pork industry, but it's not alone. We're working so closely with those state veterinarians. Obviously, they're pretty busy right now with all of the, you know, high path avian influenza and those types of things. So it was great that we had a chance to listen to a few of them, you know, just talk about some of their perspectives about what would happen if we were to get ASF and what we need to do to keep it out.
Yeah. Well, and what we need to do to keep it out, it starts at our borders, right, Jen? Biosecurity at the finishing houses and the farrowing house is ultra important, but it starts at the borders.
Sure. You know, definitely does. You know, we've got to work on keeping it out there. You know, we also talked about ways that we're trying to support research and efforts to, you know, get rid of it in some of those, you know, areas like the Dominican Republic and so forth, and the work we're doing there, and how we're kind of investing in their prevention, or no, I guess not prevention, but in dealing with it and trying to minimize that pressure on our country.
Absolutely. Good idea. Yeah. Wherever it's close, let's get rid of it and move it further and further away. Good stuff, Jen. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Jennifer Scheich, check it out at porkbusiness.com. She's got more coverage there. We got the free-for-all coming your way next right here on AgriTalk.
Farming is more than a livelihood. It's a legacy. Simplify.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. It's Friday. That means it's time for the free-for-all. Let's get things started. I'm your host, Chip Flory. I'm going to be in on the conversation, and so is Davis Michelson. Davis,
I'll be here.
If you feel like throwing that landowner editor hat on at any time, go ahead and do that.
10-4.
And also, I think we're going to need some of the details of the conversation that you had with Josh Linville about fertilizers and the availability there that you had on the show yesterday afternoon. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Chip. What a year this week.
Oh, what a way to put it. That's exactly right. We'll get to a lot of as much of the detail as we possibly can. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Welcome, Sean.
Hey, great to be here, Chip. And the other part of that, too, is some heavy issues in that week that was a year, too. It has been fast and furious and quite frankly, you know, staggering to get your head wrapped around.
Exactly. So let's turn to a source that can hopefully help us get some clarity on what exactly is happening, and that is Representative Austin Scott. He represents the 8th District of Georgia. He is a member of the House Ag Committee. He's also a member of the House Armed Services Committee. Representative Scott, welcome to AgriTalk again. Welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm just like everybody else in the world, very concerned about the things that we're seeing on the TV, and hope that people obviously keep the people in the Ukraine in their prayers and pray for those people in Russia that have shown the courage to stand up against Vladimir Putin and this regime for the things that they're doing.
Okay. That is one of the things that I want to talk to you about. And it sounds like that is some information or some intelligence that you are getting from briefings. How often are you getting briefings on Ukraine, and what did you learn in your last briefing?
Well, I can't speak to what I learned in my last briefing. We do get briefings on a very regular basis. What I will tell you, and I am comfortable telling you, is that back in December, the intelligence community had done an extremely good job and had provided a lot of insight and was very accurate with their predictions of what was going to happen in the Ukraine. Yep. I do think that the right thing was done by the DOD and the State Department and the administration in declassifying a lot of that intel and sharing it with the world. And I think that by declassifying it and sharing with the world what we expected, then maybe it softened some of the fear and anxiety that came with the attack. But there's still a lot of pain to come for America and the rest of the world financially from what is happening over there. And obviously, agriculture will be a big part of that, and candidly, maybe the first to see the increased input cost and other things.
Right, right. You mentioned the response of the Russian people to the actions by Vladimir Putin. What are you hearing there? Is there a chance that there could be where the Russian people could stand up to Putin and end this?
Well, understand this. I mean, Vladimir Putin is a guy who, that if he cannot kill his political opponent, he will put them in jail. And so Navalny, if I'm saying his name correct, and others who have actually been willing to stand up to Putin for the tyrant that he is, have either been killed or imprisoned. And so a lot of the Russians are not willing to stand up to Vladimir Putin. The ones that are certainly deserve our support and our prayers. And it is very concerning to me that, you know, with the UN, and I'll specifically stick to the UN, that when you have a non-nuclear power being attacked by a nuclear power that is superior to them in size, equipment, and virtually everything, if the UN doesn't have the ability to step in and stop some of the atrocities that are going on, then what is the function of the UN?
Right. Right.
But, right. But it's very bad. We expect it to escalate. The Ukrainian people and President Zelensky deserve a tremendous amount of credit for their ability to give the Russians a significantly better fight than I think that the world expected. But don't underestimate what the Russians are willing to do to win this. You know, who would attack? Even I did not think that they would attack a nuclear power plant the way they did and risk the potential exposure to radiation in that part of the world. Just think about that for a second. Aside from everything else that they've done, who sends rockets into a nuclear power plant?
Right.
And that's what we're dealing with. And it's not just the Ukrainians. It's the whole world. And from the standpoint of agriculture, you know, there's a tremendous amount of commerce that occurs in that Black Sea region. There's whether it's the potash that comes from Russia and Belarus, or the products, ag products going back into that region, the Black Sea and the sanctions and other things are going to have a tremendous impact from that area, cost of transportation and other things on our ag inputs.
Right. Any indication of just how much damage has been done to the ports there at the Black Sea in Ukraine?
No, I don't have any indicators on that.
Okay.
But I do know that products coming out of those ports will be sanctioned. And so you've got two of the largest suppliers of potash in Russia and Belarus. And so, you know, the fourth largest is China. Fortunately, the largest is Canada, which is obviously our neighbor. But I'm very concerned about the inputs that we need to have the yields that the world is used to in U.S. ag production and in candidly production around the world. I don't think there's been enough discussion at this stage about the food supply for the world and what it does if the Ukrainians are not allowed to plant their crops, because as soon as their ground thaws, they would be preparing their fields.
Yep.
I don't see them being able to do that in the Ukraine. They produce a tremendous amount of wheat for the world, and the impacts don't seem to be getting the type of news right now, obviously, that the kinetic strikes from the Russians are getting. But as we move further and further from the incursion day, I think you're going to see more discussions about what does this mean for the food supply of the world as we push further and further from the incursion date.
Okay, we've got about 3 minutes left. Jim, you want to jump in here? Have you got anything?
Well, real quickly, Congressman, the USA Rice this week asked, I know USDA and probably the Hill, for some relief relative to the fertilizer prices, because of all the major commodities, they have not seen the price appreciation. Is there any chance that in a coming omnibus budget or some other measure that you can give some aid to that sector?
I would certainly hope so. What I want you to understand, though, is this is not a White House that speaks with the Republicans on the Hill. This is I've served under multiple White Houses. This is the most partisan White House that I have served under. And while I would hope that we would be able to get some relief to the areas that have received the largest impacts, we have seen very little willingness from this White House to work with us on those issues. And that brings up something that is a very real concern that I think people in the ag community need to start talking about, is that we have historically, if we hadn't been able to get past a new farm bill on time, an extension is what we would usually do. Well, with the input cost, just as you're talking about with rice, doing what they've done over the last several months and certainly looking to continue to push forward, an extension of the current farm bill does absolutely nothing for production agriculture because the input prices have gone up so high that the reference prices don't do any good.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I was with a group of producers yesterday, and we had that exact conversation, Representative Scott. Real quick, I've only got about 30 seconds left on this. You said the war in Ukraine will escalate. It will last a long time. That timeline is something that agriculture is very interested in. Is it a 6 month, a 2 year, a 10 year timeline? What do you think we're looking at?
Oh, hey, I honestly do not know. I mean, I wish that the UN would come together and declare a what I would call a no-go zone over the skies of Ukraine and around the seas so that we could stop some of the atrocities. I don't expect that to happen. But if you look at what the Russians did last night, I mean, you're talking about Russians going into a country and sending rockets into a nuclear power plant.
Yep.
Now you just think about that and understand that's not what the Ukrainians are dealing with. That's what the world is dealing with.
That's right. That's right. Representative Scott, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank all of you so much.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, I guess the only grain markets that haven't backed off of the highs would be wheat, right?
Yep, and most of those contracts are locked limit up. We are seeing trading in some of the contracts, especially the spring wheat. So, you know, we'll see into the end of the day whether traders want to take profits ahead of the weekend. But, you know, it's just been a wild ride here in the wheat market in particular. You mentioned that, you know, corn has backed off a little bit. Soybeans have backed off. Soy oil's trading lower here mid-morning. And you know, palm oil was lower overnight on some corrective trades. So who knows what we'll see into the close, but the volatility is likely to continue, that's for sure.
Yeah. Who knows what we're going to see into the close? Who knows what we're going to see over the weekend? But, Beach, to me, this feels like we're going into a weekend again where the risk is greater being on the short side than the long side. The safest place is going to be no position.
Well, at this point, it's just a money game. It's, you know, it'll last, the rallies will last until the speculative money flow dries up, and we haven't seen that yet, obviously.
Exactly. Okay, take us over to the livestock trade, sharply lower prices.
Yeah, so while we're seeing the grains continue to rally, you know, livestock, long liquidation there. So in a cattle market, it's a continuation. Now the hogs, they had been holding up relatively well, but boy, it's a heavy sell-off here as we close out the week. So hogs and cattle both sharply lower.
Yeah, and we've got energy prices sharply higher again today. We should have mentioned that. Crude oil up about $3.50. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It's the free-for-all. We got Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Davis Michelson. Just wrapped up a conversation, a briefing from Representative Austin Scott of Georgia, a member of the House Ag Committee, member of House Armed Services Committee. Haney, I'm going to go to you to start this segment off, because Representative Scott mentioned the attack on the nuclear power production facility a couple of times. It makes me think that Putin did something that that intelligence, U.S. intelligence, indicated he probably wouldn't, and he did it. Are you there, Haney? Okay. How about Jim?
Right, well,
have we got Jim? Nope. Okay.
Okay, man. Here's
Davis,
the thing.
Isn't that what it
yes,
feels like?
It really does. The plant, the largest of its type in Europe, provides about 20% of Ukraine's electricity. So we've got two sort of concerning things going on here. Number one, a direct assault on critical infrastructure within Ukraine, and also an element of what I feel like is reckless abandon on the part of Mr. Putin.
Exactly.
And that's a dangerous combination. You begin to target critical infrastructure with reckless abandon, and there's no telling what happens next.
Right, right. It indicates a willingness to render the country essentially worthless for a long period of time if there had been a leak or a release of radiation there in the country. Have we got the guys, Jim, Sean?
I'm here.
Okay.
Here.
Okay. Sean, Representative Scott mentioned the attack on the nuclear power plant a couple of times, indicating to me that it was something that U.S. intelligence thought Putin would not do. Is that what your read on this?
He brought it up twice.
Yeah.
And about the gravity of the situation, it's like one of those things. Okay, what could Putin do? And if you believe that he's, you know, fallen into this sort of this deranged sort of behavior and is lost a little bit of his tactfulness, is that something he would actually do? When I saw that on TV yesterday, I was, you're like, what?
Yeah.
And what are the repercussions if this thing really catches fire at the reactor side of that factory? So this is, I think, has people a little bit perplexed. You look yesterday at the discussion with Macron. I think it was like an hour and a half discussion that the French president had with Putin. And the French media has said out of that discussion, Putin shows no signs of backing down or changing behavior. I asked myself, Chip, what ends this?
I want to get to that. But Jim, the attack on the power plant, it certainly is an escalation.
It is. But, you know, if you go back to Putin's remarks to the world, he basically threatened this and he did it.
You know, that's a very important point, and it's something that Davis and I talked about early this week. Geez, Davis, I think it was Monday when you and I were having one of our first reactions to it. Putin has proven that if he says it, don't doubt him. Take him for his word
on it,
because even as crazy as it might sound, it's a possibility, right?
Well, yes, and at some point, Putin is going to hit the button that makes the global community realize that. And I understand we want to take a measured approach in our response here, but you know, if the headlines are reading, "Yup, he went there," well, at some point we're going to have to figure out where our "there" is, and we're going to need to go there too.
Yeah, yeah. So, Jim, the strike on the power plant, is that the reason that Putin put his nuclear agency on special alert earlier this week?
Probably so. Yes.
Yeah.
He was getting ready. He was positioning for it. Yes.
It's not because he was going to launch a nuke. It's because he was getting ready for containment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Chip, one of the things that Representative Scott said that I think is worth going back to was he talked about Belarus and Russia being huge producers of potash and Canada being one of the others in terms of that group of the top four. The other thing that's happened this week here is that they're, the Teamster Union voted 97 point something percent in favor of strike action at CP Rail. That strike has not happened yet. They have to go through some mediation. But as we move forward in March, that's going to be something to pay very close attention to. It is one of our railways that would be moving potash out of Saskatchewan into places like the Midwest. So that's not good news if you're following along with potash supplies.
Sean, yeah. What does your aggressive prime minister do about that? Kenny?
So people talking about strike action already, back to work legislation, sorry. If you follow what he did a couple of years ago with the CN rail strike, and if you follow along what he did with the convoys in the short term, they'll do nothing. And they will let it play out. If he follows history, and we have a livestock sector here where I am in southern Alberta, cattle feeding sector, that is not happy and very scared, not only because they see the price of corn going up, but CP Rail is one of those the rail line that hauls corn out of Nebraska, out of the Midwest, into southern Alberta. Yeah. And what are we going to do in terms of getting corn here? It is a dire situation. They're behind already, never mind a strike happening.
As I understand, that Alberta feedlot area is basically out of corn, right?
Day to day. It is. Yeah, it's very, 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 it's unprecedented. The volumes that have had to come north due to that 2021 drought last year. It is day to day. As I talk to many cattle feeders,
unknown destination showed up as a buyer of U.S. corn this in a daily sales announcement this morning. Jim, we touched $8 March corn futures today, and somebody's just showing up to get coverage now.
Yeah. This is the spikes high, exaggerated highs, and we don't know what position we are in that range. Are we talking absolutely new highs for corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Yeah.
Chip, historical. There's two things in terms of Ukraine. Everyone's talking about, you know, will they get a crop planted? You know, what's production going to be like? But in the shorter term, also think about the ports reopening. This conflict is not ending next week. I heard Olivier Knox, foreign affairs reporter for the Washington Post, talk about, you know, this lines up to be like a 15 to 20 year conflict based on the resilience and resistance that the Ukrainian people are showing.
Right.
So, when do those ports reopen? Because, you know, Ukraine supplies a lot of corn to, say, China.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we're back to these readjusting of trade flows again. And it's going to be, you look at the futures market.
Crazy. if the ports are operational and Ukraine decides, you know what, we're going to try to sneak a couple of boats of corn out of here and send them wherever, how would you like to be on that boat? Nobody wants to be on that boat.
You're so true.
Nobody wants to be at the port when it starts to load. At some point, if the timeline on this is like you just said, Sean, that year-long timeline, the amount of damage that Putin will order to the Ukrainian infrastructure at the export locations, at, you know, terminal locations, interior, they'll do everything that they can to destroy the ability of that of Ukraine to generate revenue from agriculture, right, Jim?
Yes, and what we're more than sensing now, Chip, is not only do we have a tight supply situation U.S. for this crop year, but it's easily, can be forecasted for next year as well.
I can't believe we're to the point that we are asking the question, what happens if we don't get a Ukrainian crop this year? And the thing is, we're really asking the question, what if we don't get a Russian crop too? Because who's going to buy it?
Yes, totally. That's the moral question. Like I was talking to an equipment manufacturer who said, you know, if I could ship equipment into Russia, should I morally do so?
Right.
Right. And the same goes on the purchasing of the crop. It's, you know, I guess China may be the winner in all of this, in the sense that the only country that's big country that's willing to maybe do business with Russia at this point is probably China. Like,
but
Russia
Jim,
has become somewhat subservient to China.
Jim, wouldn't China be climbing in that same box of isolation if they did business with Russia?
Absolutely. And that's the next big shoe
Europe's
to possibly
too important
fall
to China.
The China hawks in this country are already talking about shutting them off, Chip.
Oh, my goodness.
There you go.
Shutting them off. What do you mean by that?
Well, that they don't import, from us. I'm not saying, I'm not predicting that, but I'm telling you, I'm hearing.
You're on the edge of saying the E word.
I know. Well, look what we're doing with Russia. We don't import any Russian oil. Now that's imports, but you're already seeing this food security angle this week relative to rumors about the RFS that I think is silly because EPA has not even announced the final elements of the RFS yet, but this thing is building. So it's another thing that we have to watch.
Okay. And one thing that we had to watch earlier this week was President Biden's State of the Union address. It was difficult at times, for me anyway. And it included basically it was a response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Although there were plenty of mentions of old program proposals from Build Back Better. We'll talk about that next right here on AgriTalk.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 8.
Don't.
Yeah, let's not do that. Let's keep rolling right here with the free-for-all. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Davis Michelson. Davis, you had Josh Linville from StoneX, their fertilizer guru, on the show yesterday afternoon. Does he see any relief on fertilizer prices for this spring?
He really doesn't. UAN is becoming a concern. We're seeing the spread between a pound of N in urea and in UAN narrow, but it's going in the wrong direction with urea headed higher rather than UAN coming back down. That's a major concern coming out of Russia. And now we've got a whole new fresh dust up about potash. This is all three major nutrients. This is N, this is phosphates from before, and this is potash now too.
Unbelievable. When it storms, it really storms. Jim, were you going to make a comment about China there at the end of the last segment?
That's why China's beginning to change their tone, Chip, that they know that they can't have it both ways. So I think they're reassessing at G's level, by the way.
Hey, Jim, that's got to really concern Putin because that's his backstop.
Yes.
If he doesn't have China as his backstop, he is fully on an island. It's him in Belarus. Best of luck.
Right. Yeah. That is a game changer. And China's going to have to make a decision. They're going to have to pick a side.
Well, we may have some signals this coming weekend and week when their party Congress meets, Chip.
Okay.
Chip, they got to be looking at all these sanctions. China's got to be looking at all these sanctions and how the global community has put like everything from sports to economic.
Yeah.
You know, Russia can't do anything. China has to look at that and be like, what about this Taiwan thing? No, China's different than Russia, but it's got to give them a little bit of sober second thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. There is an awesome summary of the State of the Union address in Pro Farmer Newsletter this week. Under the list of other highlights of Biden's State of the Union address, is this. He did not call for U.S. oil production or announce an end to U.S. imports of Russian oil. And, Jim, I got this question from a listener, Rock. He says, why is our industry and grain associations not demanding the reopening of the Keystone Pipeline?
Well, they should. Just perspective. Until recently, we were importing about 600,000 barrels of oil a day from Russia. Had the Keystone XL pipeline been in operation, it would have been producing about 832,000 barrels a day, Chip. It should be. And the White House is saying it wouldn't be operating right now. No. This was tempered by both the Obama and the Biden administration. But that's perspective. We need that, and we continue to need it.
Yep. Okay.
Totally. Yes, we do. Okay, State of the Union address on inflation. Biden scolded CEOs and told them to lower their cost, not your wages. And he reiterated that his plan to fight inflation is to spend. Jim, it made my head explode. How it doesn't work that way.
Well, it was a stupid line, and he keeps saying it. And I was on a lecture with Texas A&M University this week, and I asked a doctor there, do you teach that at Texas A&M? And he said, that's not in our curricula.
Right. It like you said, he continues to say it. What scares me is he believes what he is saying. Somebody's convinced him that you can fight inflation by lowering your costs, not your wages. Does he not understand that wages are your costs?
Yes. And it just follows through with the silly thing that we got into and horrible things that with the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department keeping saying that inflation was transitory when they overstimulated this great country at the beginning of last year. And then the Fed held their tapering power about 9 months too late.
Yeah.
Well, not to mention, I haven't seen any headlines about wages going down. I have seen headlines about wages going up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also counter to his Buy America plan. Because how do you lower your costs? You go overseas.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, Jim, you asked Representative Scott about, is there a plan out there to provide some relief for fertilizer prices? And then I see this lower your costs, not your wages. And then I see this spend to fight inflation. I know what your reaction to this is going to be, Jim. But the White House is setting us up for price caps.
I just think that hopefully we've learned the lessons of the past, but I can't rule it out, Chip. But he keeps on signaling that because he limits it right now to primarily on the drug situation. When he mentioned the insulin prices to get it down to what, to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month. But then he kind of wants to expand that. When will we ever learn? You can't have an overall price control.
Packer concentration made the State of the Union. Okay. At some point, he's going to say, you know what? I've had enough of $5 hamburger. Let's make it $3.50.
Yes.
You know
and
what?
Interestingly, Chip, that was not in his prepared remarks.
Right.
So
it's on his mind.
He added that. Absolutely. I think that's important to note. I do want to say he did throw a few olive branches when he said the answer to crime and problems with the criminal justice system isn't to defund the police. It's to fund the police. So that was a gimme. And he also said the U.S. needs to secure the border and fix the immigration system. So it made some sense. It didn't make a lot of sense what he said, but those two things really resonated.
The rest of it felt like word salad.
Word salad. Absolutely. He needed one of their Hollywood script writers to write it. It was not uplifting. It lacked a coherent theme. And again, I do not like to say this about any president, but this he missed an opportunity here. He missed an opportunity. And especially, Chip, when he said, our country, the state of the union of our country is stronger today than it was a year ago. That's absolutely incorrect.
Fellas, I got a feeling it's going to be an active weekend. Try to get some rest, okay, Haney?
Hey, you've got Iowa State and Baylor tomorrow. You got your hands full, Chip.
Yeah, yes, we certainly do. No question about it. Jim, we'll talk to you later. Talk to you Monday on Signal the Noise.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, and Davis, we'll talk to you this afternoon. Thanks, buddy.
Indeed, you bet.
All right, Andy Schisler.